What I'm going to give you today, so that you don't have just like pages and pages of notes, is just a metaphor to begin to understand Proverbs a little bit. It is an easy way to teach. So I work with college students a lot, and this, I don't even have to take my notes anymore many times to go teach what I'm about to teach, because it's just so intuitive that you can just remember it, okay? So you basically have six principles flowing from the metaphor that I'm about to use in Proverbs. Proverbs contains the metaphor, and where I originally heard this, whether you agree with all of his doctrine or not, but Andy Stanley wrote a book on the principle of the path, and I read that little book. It's a little book. I really think that he captured some of the essence of what Proverbs is about. So I hope it's as helpful to you as it has been to me. So I'll develop it as we go along here. Before we get to the metaphor, however, I want to begin to do a little bit of introduction to the book of Proverbs. God has designed this world in such a way that it has a discernible order to it. Meaning, if I begin to discern the way that relationships work, I can navigate them prosperously, not for your wealth or anything like that, but just I can avoid the calamity that comes from, well, basically sinful choices. So when I begin to understand the way that God has ordered this world, and I can navigate relationships according to that, I would call that biblical wisdom. Proverbs is all about wisdom. God has ordered this world in such a way that when you learn to navigate the relationships of this world, that's biblical wisdom. I also believe this. Proverbs did not just come about magically from Solomon's mind. It was built also on something else. It was built on the Old Testament law. You say, Brad, wisdom, I've never heard quite that before, wisdom and the law. Well, turn, if you will, to Proverbs 1 just for a second. We'll probably park there a little later on for more extended time. Look at Proverbs chapter 1, verse 10. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 10. My son, if sinners entice you, do not give in to them. If they say, come along with us and let's lie in wait for somebody's blood, let's waylay some harmless soul. I'm going to skip some phrases here. Then it says, do not set foot in their path. Verse 18, these men lie in wait for their own blood. They waylay only themselves. Such is the end of all who go after ill-gotten gain. Like, where did Solomon come up with this? So if you're going out there and you're going to go try to capture some naive soul out there, and you're trying to set a trap for him so that you can get some gain from him, you're basically setting a trap for yourself. In the end, you're going to get caught up in the snare. Like, where would Solomon get that from? Any thoughts? Is there any place in the Old Testament where that happens as well? Before Proverbs is written. Any thoughts? Well, let me give you some thoughts, okay? What did Joseph's brother say when they saw Joseph coming? Does anybody remember what Joseph's brother saw? Here comes this dreamer. Let's see what happens to this dreamer. They first said, let's kill him. But then they said, what value is there in killing him? Let's at least make some money off our brother. Pretty nice brothers, aren't they? The exact same terminology in Genesis 37, greedy for gain, is used right there in Proverbs chapter 1. And Judah was the one who was leading the charge. Let's sell our brother and be greedy for gain. We can make something off of him. Anybody know what happened in Genesis 38, the very next chapter? The very next chapter. Genesis 38. I see somebody nodding their head. Tamar. And what happened with Judah and Tamar? Judah was entrapped. And you may not always catch this in our English translations, but the same words that Judah and his brothers used to deceive their father is exactly the same words that Tamar says to Judah in the very next chapter. So, you know, when we think about where did wisdom principles come from, I cannot prove this ultimately, but when Solomon in all of his wisdom has the Old Testament, some of the Old Testament in front of him, reflecting on God's word, he's distilling the principles that he is finding into wisdom. That's nothing different than what pastors do when they read an Old Testament narrative and they moralize the text. Okay, and here's the principle that you learn from it. So the principles of wisdom that are probably captured in wisdom ultimately are coming from the God's word that was given to his people earlier. Another example. Okay, strange woman. Flee the strange woman. If you go into her, you're going to find death. Flee. When Proverbs writes of these things, when Solomon writes of these things, is there examples of that also in the narratives that preceded Proverbs? Thoughts? Where might those kinds of things have come from? Yes, Cain was supposed to flee his desires. That's true. That's not as close as a parallel. Even in Genesis 39, when Potiphar's wife, the strange foreign woman, comes, Joseph gives the positive example of that. Samson, however, when Samson toys around with all of the foreign women, the prostitutes, the last event of his life is fooling around with the prostitute, Samson, and what's her name? Delilah. And how does that end? How does that end? He's dead. It didn't end good. He had a last act of faith there in crying out to God, but it did not end good. Here's my only point. I think Proverbs was written by Solomon. Yes, God gave him an enormous amount of wisdom, but that was not different than what we're also seeing from the Old Testament narratives. So there's confluence. There's a combination of the law in the Old Testament and what we understand also as wisdom. I think the wisdom principles are just more generalized and not as specifically in their context, their local cultural context. They're more universal principles distilled from some of the Old Testament narratives. You say, Brett, I'm not sure about that. Well, let me give you another illustration. Let's go to the New Testament. Sermon on the Mount. Sermon on the Mount. Sermon on the Mount is not about the gospel. Okay, the gospel, the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ hasn't even happened yet. So the Sermon on the Mount can't be about the good news, because that kind of good news hasn't happened yet. I think the Sermon on the Mount is primarily about what true righteousness is. When you think about the Old Testament law, here is what God values. The Sermon on the Mount, let me give you a few phrases here. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness. God's righteousness. Blessed are those who are persecuted for the sake of, what's the word? Righteousness. Okay. Unless your righteousness surpasses that of the scribes and the Pharisees, beware of practicing your righteousness in front of men to be seen by them. Seek ye first his kingdom and his righteousness. The Sermon on the Mount is Jesus' sermon about here is what God values. And it's an exposition of the Old Testament law as well. An example. When Jesus Christ says, you have heard that it was said, thou shalt not commit adultery, but I say to you, anyone who lusts after a woman shall be, is committing adultery as well. So here's what he's saying.